That's what I've always told people, and they don't believe me necessarily here, that your club could be winning, or your club could win the game, and the supporters are furious and want to burn the whole fucking house down. They're furious how the team played. They're furious with, you name the reason, they're furious, and they'll let you know it, and you won.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, you're playing with an inferior team, for example, right? You're complete favorites, and you win the game because you scored a penalty. So what? Okay, 3 points. So what? What's that mean for us for the next game? And what's that mean for us when we have to play Brazilian teams in Libertadores?
Right.
Okay. So you beat Vélez 1-0. Okay. Now Palmeiras. Mm. Group stage. Libertadores. How are you going to make it out?
Yeah, they look to the future. They're like, okay, what does this mean in the bigger picture?
They're always getting criticized. It's incredible. That's crazy, man.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the 343 Podcast, where we work tirelessly to elevate the level of discourse and practitionership here in American soccer. Today is a one-on-one between myself and a longtime friend who is in Argentina. But what do I mean by friend? I mean that at age 13, Facundo Bruno was first recruited by my brother Brian Kleiben to be on one of our youth teams, a U14 Southern California youth team. He was an Argentinian. His parents and family are all from Argentina. And he was one of our blue chip recruits, you can say. Baller at age 13. It was him together with Jonathan Prieto, who came over to the team and escorted us up the divisional ranks, ultimately culminating in a national championship at the U18 level. This, in my opinion, was the best work of my brother Brian Kleiben, was that team, and not all the famous teams that came afterwards, the YouTube famous ones, or even his more recent work. So I caught up with him. He is in Argentina now. He left to Argentina, I think, when he was 17 years old, kind of right when he finished off youth soccer here in the States. Him and his mom and his brother went to Argentina, and they've been living there ever since. He was born in 1990, so that means he's 34, 35 years old now. So imagine a grown man, and I wanted to catch up with him. So this is a conversation between two friends catching up. There, of course, is some soccer injected here, but there's more of a cultural feel, more of a familial sort of conversation, and not what we're used to here on the 343 Podcast. So just a heads up on that. I'll keep what supports this podcast very brief this time. Coaches, you want to go to 343coaching.com. You get remarkable coaching education there that does not exist anywhere else. I'm telling you. And parents, same goes for you. You go to 343masterclass.com. The program there is specially designed for American soccer parents to get really up on the learning curve and be able to discern things here in the American soccer ecosystem for your kids. And that is how you best can guide them. All right, everybody, I hope you enjoy this episode with Facundo Bruno. It's a little bit different, quite a bit different than what we usually do on the podcast, but here we go.
What's up, man? Don't you?
Good, man. It looks like you have a nice place, dude. Really nice bedroom.
Yeah, I was trying to get like a wallpaper behind me. Is there a way?
No big deal. Like, you can just send me over an image of whatever wallpaper you want, dude, and then we'll put that as the background.
All right.
No, I was just making a general remark, dude. It looks like you're doing okay. Is that a hotel room? Is that your actual pad? What's going on?
No, this is my room. This is my room, actually. This is where I work.
Very nice, Faku. Very nice. How's mom?
She's good, man. She's living her dream, you know what I mean? She moved to Mar del Plata, city of her dreams. I want to say 2 years ago.
Okay.
She moved there. So she's living on her own. She's just cruising. You know, going out, dancing. It's just a lovely city for elder people. So she comes every now and then as well. She was just here for my birthday. That was last month. So yeah, she's doing good.
Love that. Are you still in Buenos Aires?
I am. Just outside of Buenos Aires. So actually, it is Buenos Aires. Even Mar del Plata is considered Buenos Aires. Mm. And it's like 4 hours away from the capital. But I'm just outside the capital, Ciudad Vita.
Got you. How long of a drive or is it to the centro?
To Monumental, maybe like 30 minutes. So it's
okay,
not bad.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Well, happy belated birthday, dude. How old are you now? You were, let me guess, you were a 90, right? A 1990?
No, I'm 91. So 91. I just turned 34. Yeah.
Híjole. No, it's so interesting, right? Because when did Brian first have you? You were 14, maybe?
I think so.
So it's been 20 years, basically.
Mm-hmm. 20 years.
God damn. So look, you're 34. Like, we were younger than you are right now when you were playing for us.
That's right.
That's crazy, man. That's so crazy.
You know what's what else is crazy, Gary? I just thought of you today at work. I had this, I'm going through like a course, right? Because I just joined this company. And the lady that was giving me the course, she just like zoned off. And she was like, this guy always comes up to my lawn and just with his lawnmower, cuts my grass and stuff like that. And he's like 14. And I remembered. She's like, this guy's going to be a millionaire one day. And I said, what the hell? How is that clicking to me so much right now? And then I just remembered Gary telling me the same exact thing when I was 13, 14, 15, maybe.
I had that crazy idea of, hey, let's start a landscaping business ourselves. Like, why don't we go and mow lawns and do all that sort of stuff? And if the Mexicans can do it, we can do it. You know what I'm saying? And then I'm like, how about you, Facundo, and Carlos, and, you know, Johnny or whoever, let's get a group, let's start up the business, and let's build that baby out. You know, who knows if we had actually committed to that, Facundo, what would have happened? Maybe we would have fallen on our face and failed because the Mexicans would price us, you know, we would undercut us. They'd be like, we'll do it for free. You know what I mean? But at the same time, like, fast forward 20 years, maybe we would have an empire right now. Who knows? It's crazy the things that stick in our minds, huh?
That's nuts, man. When I heard that, I just couldn't believe it, I swear. I instantly thought of you.
No, sincerely, more than anything, I just wanted to catch up with you, dude. It's been a long time. And I always think of you guys off and on, you know, because the mind drifts and you start thinking about things from your past, right? And I'm like, I wonder what these fools were up to. And I wonder what you in particular were up to, because I feel like it was yesterday. I'm not joking. I see it right now. We were at training. I don't remember what the park was called, but it was team training, right? And I think it was after training was over and I was next to a tree and you were taking off your cleats or something like that. And you were talking about going to Argentina, leaving Argentina. And I was kind of saying, I don't want you to go, not out of wanting to keep you, but more from a life perspective. Like, it's better if you were to stay in the United States versus going. I don't know if you remember any of this sort of stuff, but I'm like, you should stay if you can. And no, man, you bounced and you figured it out over there. And, you know, fast forward maybe 10 years to when you and I kind of caught up again just a little bit. And I think you told me the story of how, like, people in Argentina, maybe you included, you know, the money's worthless. Like, you get money and then inflation, you know, makes the price of eggs double within a week. And so you have to spend your money immediately. There's no way to save. So people would buy bricks or something like that. Just buy bricks and keep bricks wherever they lived because, okay, if inflation goes up, the price of bricks also goes up along with it. So at least that's a mechanism to preserve your wealth, so to speak. So it's weird the things that stick into my mind. That buying bricks as a method of savings has always stuck with me.
Now that you mentioned it, I recall you coming up to me and telling me to stay in the U.S. And it was my initial thought, you know, to stay. But I was so young. I was about 18, 19 when my mom, you know, decided to come back to enjoy the last years of my grandma. And, it was for family. So
yeah,
we've always stuck together, you know, my brother and my mom. We were so close. We still are. And we decided to come back. And I am the man I am today because I took that decision as well. I've learned so much being outside of the U.S. that it's incredible, man. Like, you see life completely different. And you see these kind of things. It's not that bad anymore. I mean, when I first got here, there wasn't so much communication through the internet. So maybe it was like, 2011, and Facebook was just barely starting, or there wasn't even Instagram. There's no Zoom. So it was harder to connect. That's why I probably lost so much touch with you guys. But right now, that the communication gets here faster. So I feel like there's some similarities to what you guys live out in the States or in any other country as well, right? So like in Europe as well. But yeah, I mean, I like it here. I feel free, really free. Freedom is real here. Like you could do whatever you want, literally. And just people live here completely different. They don't see material things like so important in their life, right? And the soccer culture is just outrageous. It's just completely different, you know?
Yeah, less robotic. Do you remember, I think Brian and I invented the whole term, not being a robot or being a robot here in the United States. And obviously we're talking about it in the context of soccer specifically with you guys, but we were also talking about it more broadly speaking, like you just addressed, like here in the States, everybody is programmed to be robotic. It's like you wake up, get dressed, you go to work for 8 hours or 10 hours or whatever it is. And then you come home, you eat dinner, and then you do it all over again the next day for 5 days a week. And then come Saturday, you kind of enjoy your Saturday, but Sunday, it's already you're thinking about Monday going back to work. And the neighbors don't talk to each other. See, this is one of the things that I remember about Argentina, because I visited throughout my entire youth. You know, my family and I would go every couple of years. And the one thing that was most notable is all the neighbors know each other. Everybody kind of talks to each other. It's more community focused. I don't know if it's still like that because I haven't been there in quite some time. But for sure, here in the United States, it's not like that. Nobody gives a shit about each other here in the States. We're all kind of in our own little worlds and you go through life that way. So yeah, maybe you can comment a little bit about that, because I think it's connected to the soccer culture too, is not being robotic in nature, not having to follow the rules so much, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, some things have changed. I mean, like you probably don't see your neighbors as much like you used to before. At least that part of society has changed. And it's mainly because of technology as well, right? Everybody's just staring down at their phones, and that happens everywhere. But as far as being a robot, like you mentioned, people here just enjoy life in a different way. They go to work, but after work, they're doing something. You know, they go to work because they have to, but they do everything else because they want to and they love to. So, for example, like Fridays are definitely Fridays. They're popping everywhere you go here. The restaurants are filled, or movie theaters too. Any common areas are packed of people just going with their friends, or there's lots of groups. Maybe they don't communicate with each other. Like, it's not like if you have your own group that you just stay inside your group, but that group would be a group of 20 people. They have groups of WhatsApps. They share so much content inside WhatsApp and in their social media as well. We use stickers a lot. I don't know if you guys do that as well. But it's so warming. Like, it's different in that space.
Got you. Are you still playing, dude? Because I see you uploading some stuff on Instagram once in a while with you shooting free kicks and stuff. I have no idea what the league structure is over there. Yeah, so tell me a little bit about you continuing to play. Well, first off, rewind the tape a little bit, right? So you arrived to Argentina. You're like 19 years old, 20 years old. Like, when did you start kind of playing formally again, like on an actual team, you know, in some sort of competition? And then, you know, fast forward me through today.
Okay. Well, when I got here, I started playing back when I was like maybe 21 or 22. So it took me like 2 years to adapt to society, really, because when I came here, I was so different. There was like a big cultural difference, and you can see it in me directly. Yeah. When I would walk around the street, like people would just see me as a, you know, a foreigner.
Yeah.
So it took me time to adapt for sure. And when I was like 21, I started playing in a league called La Liga de Flores, which is nearby my house. This league has so many years. I mean, they've been around for like at least, I want to say 40, 50 years. So it's like elderly people going just to watch the games. And they have so many teams, so many divisions. They have promoción, basically. So to get in the league, you have to play a tournament to see if you win that tournament, then you go to like the D league, right? So the first league, and then so forth and so forth until you get to A league. And then they play on weekends. They play during the week as well. So like midweek under the lights. It's pretty cool. It was a pretty cool league, but the fields were really bad.
Yeah.
Like really bad. And they just torched the fields. There's so many games, so many teams. Everyone wants to play. And that's just one league. There's tons of leagues, all over the place. And this is amateur level, right? So now I play a league near my house. It's not so bad. The competition's not like great. But I play to, you know, hang out with my friends. And for the love for the sport.
For sure. Is it comparable to like the Mexican leagues, the Mexican adult leagues here in the States, what you're currently doing there? I'm not necessarily saying like level, but I'm saying like the feel of it all, like what the competition is.
I think so. I mean, when I went to the Mexican leagues, I don't remember if they had like locker rooms, like where you can go and change, for example.
No.
Well,
no.
Here they do. And they all shower together. It's weird, but... they have that vibe from like when they're little, you know, when you were playing club here in Inferiores or whatever, they definitely, you know, share locker rooms and stuff like that. So they do still have that here, and that's probably different. And also like when the game ends, people just stay and hang around, watch other games. There's different fields in the venue. So it's not like one or two fields, it's like seven or eight fields. So it's much.
Are some dudes still pretty good?
Yeah. Yeah. There's some ballers for sure. For sure. In fact, some people that play in club level, like B levels, for example, or C levels, they go to the tournaments. In fact, Di Maria talked about, you know, when he was playing at Rosario, that he would go with his friends and, you know, mess around in these tournaments until he got caught.
Yeah, got you.
It does happen. Right?
When you say B and C levels, you're for our folks here in the States, second division, third division professionals.
Yeah,
is what you're talking about. Yeah. So mm-hmm. So there's Primera and then La B and then C, right?
Exactly. And C and D and Federal. There's so many leagues, man.
Got you. I guess I should have asked you to start from the very beginning when you were here in the States, you know, because folks don't know who you are, right? And it's interesting, Facundo, like as the audience has grown, because I've been doing this, I started this whole 343 thing when you were still here. You know what I mean?
I remember.
That, it was that long ago. But, you know, obviously people who join the past 5 years, the past 3 years, the past 1 year, they have no idea about OSC Rage. They have no idea who Facundo Bruno was, you know, or Jonathan Prieto or all these guys. And it's really quite sad because back in those days, technology isn't obviously what it is today. So it's kind of like a lost era, right? Because there isn't all this film available of you guys. There isn't all the online tables, standings, records, all that sort of stuff like there is now. But I always like to say that was Brian's best work because... right after you guys, he basically got the 9 and 10 year old cracks already. You know what I'm saying? And he already knew how to make them among the best in the country. He already knew how to do that, right? But with you guys, it was all like an experiment because he was still new at this whole thing. And yet, together with you guys, you accomplished amazing things. And I thought you were among the best players there were, you know, but nobody knows here in the States. I get all these stories. Facundo's like, oh, Gary, you always talk shit. Like players fall through the cracks. Who are these players that should have been pro and weren't pro? And I'm like, guys, if I name these guys to you, you don't even know who I'm talking about. Like, and you can even do a Google search and you won't even know who I'm talking about. So there's no way to verify that what I'm saying is true. You feel me? It's just sad to me. It's like a lost generation, a lost story that never gets told, Faku. So I don't know, share whatever it is that you want to share, whatever comes to mind, because I think it's important from a whole bunch of angles.
Right. Well, I started with Brian when I was 14, I think. He was just, you know, shocked that I was at warm-up and I was hitting bangers from like half field. I was just trying to hit the crossbar. When everybody else was, you know, doing their warm-ups. And he expressed that, you know, he lost nights of sleep to see how he was, you know, assemble a team to stop me. But it wasn't just me, right? I was playing with Jonathan. Jonathan is still my best friend, and we had an incredible duo when we were young. There was so much difference between our peers, and when we joined Brian's team, he basically assembled like an all-star team for us. And he made us believe that we can be the best of the best. And we ended up being national champs.
But when you joined, the team was like not a top level team at all. It was a better situation than where you were, right? But it was still kind of like whatevers.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just like a, you know, little league team. Super easy. The competition was easy as well. And then we started joining better tournaments, I think, when we joined. And there was rivalries that, you know, came up, and that was super fun.
Got it. Yeah, man. I don't know if you ever ponder, because I do, admittedly. I don't think I was ever good enough to be a professional, even though back in the day I used to think that maybe. Do you ever think back? You're like, fuck, like, what if a different path had happened? Do you ever think about whether you were good enough to potentially be a pro or not? And what's the answer to that self-talk?
When I was young, I felt like I was good, you know, but I never felt like I was the best. I mean, there was great competition. I would see like my peers as well and the team that Brian assembled, and they were nuts as well. Like, they were real ballers. But becoming a pro is just being with the right people at the right time, surrounded by a good environment. There's lots of factors that come into play when cracking that first team or being able to even get a shot. So do I think back? Yeah, but because of the good times, right, that I shared with my friends and the good memories that I have, but I don't regret anything I did. I probably could have came back to Argentina and maybe I would have had a better shot here because football was just is way bigger and was way bigger back then as well. But I don't regret it. I saved those memories and I cherish them. And then seeing Brian doing what he's doing today, it makes me happy. And it makes me think back and say, okay, we helped him pave his way, right? So he's influencing other players that might get a chance or a better chance that we did in back then. So I don't regret it at all, but I do think back on it with happy eyes as well.
Yeah, no, I wasn't thinking about regret. I was more thinking about you reflecting on what your level was. That's all. Relative to who went on maybe to be a pro, for example. Because I can rattle off names, and some of these names the audience might recognize, like Danny Mwanga. Do you remember that name?
Yeah,
Danny
Mwanga, I remember
the guy from up north, Oregon, who came from the Congo as a refugee and ultimately went to college, right? Did well in college and then got drafted to MLS and played some MLS years. Do you remember Eric Hurtado?
I'm not sure exactly. Oh, yeah, I think I do. I think I do now that you mention him.
He was on Mwanga's team also, that Washington team. Remember? So he went on to play MLS and stuff. I think he's actually still playing USL now because he's older, obviously. So he dropped down a level. And Carlos Alvarez and Richard Menjivar. And, you know, you remember these sorts of names that float out there. And some of these guys got the opportunity, you know, to play. And I think that group, you guys were in that group, in that conversation too. So that's kind of what I mean. Like, I think you guys had the level to have a shot, if that makes sense. But what I don't know, Facu, and now that you're in Argentina, you can enlighten me. I don't know, because I'm not there. Like, how good is a 16, 17, 18 year old there? That's kind of like, they haven't cracked it. They're not a pro yet. You know what I'm saying? But they're kind of like, they're like, maybe.
Right. I think I understood your question wrong when you first asked it. I thought you were meaning playing pro like in general here, but maybe in the environment that we were in cracking MLS, I would say yes. You know, like any of the guys on the team that Brian had would probably make MLS for sure. But if we have to talk about playing in River or Boca here, or even Huracan or Vélez, the first division here in Argentina, they're just ridiculous. I would never play. I would have never played. Or I think in the environment that I was in, even though it was a high level environment, these guys are just a different breed. They're just physical. They're hungry. They live completely different than we do. It's not like, okay, if we win or if we lose, we're still gonna, you know, meet up on Monday and we'll try it again. It's just like war to them. There's so many people that are trying to play in that same position that you're playing. They want that same jersey that you have. It just numbers. It's just ridiculous. So people just die to play here. And I don't think I was willing to die, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
To play.
So how old is the kid, the River kid that just got sold to Real Madrid? He's like 17. Mastantuono?
17.
Okay, but see, when you're looking at it from a distance, you're not there on the field watching these players play. When you're looking at it from up at an elevation, from TV range, you look at these guys, and some guys you might think, that guy sucks, that fool sucks, why is he even, how did he even become a pro? But when you're down on the field level or you have to jump into a training session with them, it's a completely different world. They are super cracks, all of them. But when you see it from on TV, you're like, I can do that. Oh, I can do that. What's so special about that? And I'm not so sure. Well, I just wish the American fan would understand that even more deeply than they currently do. You know, so it's interesting to hear from your perspective that, yeah, like a 16, 17, 18-year-old kid who's in the academies there for professional clubs like River, Boca, Huracan, Argentino Juniors or whatever, they're just better, aren't they? And but it's not technique, right? Or is it technique also? What you described was the head, the mentality is what you described.
Yeah, it's definitely technique as well. I mean, you can criticize anyone from the couch for sure. But when you, how many of the critiques that you have in the US actually go to the stadiums? Is that a 50-50? Is that, I mean, I'm asking this because how would you think a 17-year-old American would perform in front of 86,000 people in a Monumental?
No, okay, that's the difference though, in a Monumental. Because there are kids here who are signed now by MLS that are 17 or 16 or 18, and they get thrown into games, you know, in packed stadiums, and they're all right. But I think the key is what you just said, in Monumental. You're playing in Argentina's first division in that atmosphere, which is worlds apart from what we're talking about here.
Yeah, I mean, and there's 86,000 people every mm-hmm. game, Gary. I mean, and they're playing against Vélez or Unión. Just the pressure's on you, your favorite. You have to win. And let's say it's easier to play in El Monumental because, you know, the stadium and the field is more European than anything else. So that's why they bring, you know, those European players back here to play at River, because they're accustomed to playing in that environment, in that field. And that's why River players get called up to the national team as well, because they're already used to the field, right? But when you have to go play away, you have to go play in Argentino Juniors, you have to go play in Rosario, and, you know, it's just away fans. How is that going to impact your performance? How good are you going to be? That's the real difference. I mean, all respect to the U.S., but how is the atmosphere in the stadiums? Have you been, Gary? I haven't, for example, been to an MLS game, but I could tell you there's no way it could be like the Newell's crowd or the Rosario Central crowd or going away and playing in Union. There's no way.
Have you seen, I bring this up regularly on the show too. This guy's become a meme. So in Seattle, right? The Seattle Sounders, MLS, they focused in many years ago to their quote unquote Barra Brava, which is hilarious. It's a joke. And they're singing their chant, right? Seattle, fight and win. You know, it's so gay. Okay. But you see this guy who is the leader, right? He's leading the chant, and it's some metro hippie white boy, 30 years old or 28. And he's leading it with his little microphone. He's like, Seattle, fight and win. You know, oh, and that's what they think is an amazing high pressure atmosphere, dude. I've been to so many games, dude. I've been to Seattle games where they say is the best atmosphere or one of the best atmospheres in MLS. And it's funny, dude. I think they're just trying to mimic the culture, but it's not real, right? Because if the team loses, nobody really cares, Faku. Nobody really cares. It's kind of like, oh, that was an entertaining show, a nice night out with the friends and have some beers, a nice night out with the family, you know, have the kids have a good time. And the game's over and everybody goes their different ways. And if they lose, right, let's say they lose 4-0, the kids and everybody are still down there trying to get autographs from the players and stuff, you know, like, bro, if River loses 4-0 at home, nobody's there. Oh, let me sign your autographs and fucking t-shirts and shit.
Not only that, you know what's funny? I've been to the stadium several times, obviously, and River could be playing and winning 1-0, and you can hear in the stadium, movete, River, movete, movete, deja de joder. They're pressuring because they don't like what they're seeing, and they're winning 1-0.
You know, yeah, what I mean? That's what I've always told people, and they don't believe me necessarily here, that your club could be winning, or your club could win the game, and the supporters are furious and want to burn the whole fucking house down. They're furious how the team played. They're furious with you name the reason. They're furious, and they'll let you know it, and you won.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, you're playing with an inferior team, for example, right? You're complete favorites. And you win the game because you scored a penalty. So what? Okay, 3 points. So what? What's that mean for us for the next game? And what's that mean for us when we have to play Brazilian teams in Libertadores?
Right.
Okay. So you beat Vélez 1-0. Okay. Now Palmeiras. Group stage. Libertadores. How are you going to make it out?
Yeah, they look to the future. They're like, okay, what does this mean in the bigger picture? How about the broadcasters when you're listening to a game? On TV or on the radio or something, do they let the club have it? Or are they like they are over here where they lube up, you know, the club and they're like, oh, it's okay. Everything's fine. You know, there's not harsh criticism. Do the broadcasters over there fucking let it rip?
Wow. I mean, there's a huge difference there. Like we can't live the same experience, man. There's no way. These guys here, have you heard Mariano Clos before? He's incredible, like not only in his commentary, but how he lives it. I've seen MLS games and commentaries like, hey, good soccer tonight, Kevin. And I'm like, what the hell? What am I watching? You don't even have to go further. I mean, watch a Premier League game with English commentary. It's way different. And when you talk about criticism, for example, let's take Enzo Fernandez, you know. What does this guy have to do to be named better than Riquelme? There's a lot of people that could easily argue that Riquelme is way better than Enzo Fernandez. Was way better than Enzo Fernandez. Okay. Why? You know, what did Riquelme win with Argentina? What did he do in Europe? He had a great history in Boca, and he was incredible against Madrid in the big stage. 100%. Enzo Fernandez was incredible in the World Cup. He won the World Cup. He won a Copa America. He went to Benfica and he was insane. Gary, he was screaming to be on the national team. He was sold for 121 million pounds. And people were saying, oh, they spent so much money on Enzo Fernandez.
No, it's Facundo, it's amazing that you're saying these things because take that and now come to the American environment because our audience is American, obviously. I'm trying to, you know, bring more things to light here. Here, they're like, oh, Christian Pulisic, incredible, like top class, amazing, you know? And you just finished describing that the Argentine public, a good proportion, is like Enzo Fernandez, trash, guard, like, no, nah, no chance. Riquelme like is up here and Enzo doesn't even exist. Can't even tie his shoelaces, this sort of thing. And he just got purchased for $120 million, dude.
But not only that, he just won the Conference League. He won the Club World Cup. He's been crucial for every team he's played.
Yeah.
I'm just saying Enzo Fernandez just to point him out. But McAllister, why don't they say he's better than, you know, Aymar? Or why don't they say he's better than whoever? They don't call him the greatest. And he's banging bangers in the Premier League. He has a 10 on his back in one of the best teams in the Premier League. And Julian Alvarez, another top-notch player. They don't praise him like he's God. Okay, show us. Go to Atletico Madrid and score 30 goals. And you're still not going to be...
Yeah.
They're always getting criticized. It's incredible. That's crazy, man.
But it was always like that, Facu. Even prior to your generation, like Brian and my generation, when we were watching that group of Crespo, Batistuta, Piojo López, like all those guys, even before La Canigia and all that stuff, the criticism was always there. Always a fire burning. Because now, folks, I could see the arguments happening already. Now folks might say like, yeah, but Gary, you know what Facundo is saying is like, it's because you guys had all these superstars back in the day. So you're comparing this generation to the prior generation who were superstars. So it makes sense that you're criticizing. No, the criticism has always been there. Always. Okay. It's just part.
And it always will be.
Yeah. And always will. It's just part of Argentine culture. It's not just soccer specific. We're hypercritical mother effers in all aspects of life. You know, it just happens to carry over to soccer. It's not our soccer culture. It is the culture. Nothing's ever good enough for anything. Nothing's ever good enough for mom, for dad, for uncle, for aunt, like for friend, nothing. Everybody's imbecile. You know what I'm saying? We're in this eternal competition. No, but I'm serious. But I think that is what breeds the excellence. And whenever I try to bring that to the States, there's like this immune response that rejects it. They don't want to hear it. It's just a different culture here. When I trashed, I didn't even trash the guy. I'm compared to you guys, I'm super soft, okay? But they think I'm hardcore here. When I say something like, who the fuck is Weston McKennie? If I went to Argentina and pulled over the cab driver or anybody coming out of the match from River or Boca or Vélez or whatever, I'm like, hey, what do you think of Weston McKennie? They're going to be like, what are you talking about, Gary? Who's that?
I tried that with my cousins. You know, they're huge football fans and they watch the Premier League and they know who plays in La Liga, who plays in England, they even know who plays in, you know, Turkey sometimes. Yeah. To be honest, if they're good enough, they have no idea who plays in the U.S.
No clue.
They can't name more.
But here, it's kind of like... I'm not going to rehash the whole thing because people have heard it a million times, my criticism of Weston McKennie, and people fucking went crazy. Like, oh, Gary, you're an idiot. You don't know what you're talking about. Look, he just got purchased by Juventus. Look, he now plays for Juventus. He gets a lot of minutes. He's a starter and stuff. I'm like, so what? Like, okay, it's cool. We have a player that's on like a quote unquote big team. It's not really a big team anymore. It was a big team when Serie A was big. Back when it was Crespo and Batistuta and Juan Sebastian Verón and Parma. And like, that's when Serie A was the shit. You know what I'm saying? The last time Juventus was good was when Pogba was there and they got to the Champions League final and lost to Barcelona and stuff like that. Juve is Juve. It's an important club. It's a big club, but fucking chill the fuck out. And listen, you just told the story of McAllister. You told the story of Enzo Fernandez, and we're shitting on them. And I can't say here that Weston McKennie is like, whatever. They go crazy on me.
But Shua's number 10 for quite a while was Paulo Dybala.
Yeah, nothing. Pablo Dybala over there, trash. Who's Paulo Dybala? Get the fuck out of here.
He's not even trash. In the national team. If we go a little deeper. Nicolas Gonzalez is a Juventus player and he played in the national team here. Who cares?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You have to prove it day in and day out. That's why Enzo Fernandez and McAllister and Julian Alvarez, being so young, they're so hungry.
Yeah.
Because there's newcomers all the time, man. There's people biting your ass every single day. If you don't perform, you're not going to be in the national team. That's it. I don't care if your name is Julian Alvarez. I don't care if your name is Enzo Fernandez. I don't care if you're McAllister.
Well, yeah, it's not marketing over there. It's purely merit-based, purely technical decisions, period. End of story. But over here, Facu, it's marketing and non-technical things that heavily weigh on who is elevated and who stays elevated. Like over here, everybody has already assumed the past 4 years who the national team players are, and that's it. That's it. And if I were to suggest, like Christian Pulisic, I don't know if you are aware of this, that Christian said, oh, I'm tired, long season. I don't want to report into the national team. Pochettino, please, you know, I want this time off, you know, to recover and stuff. Like, and I came out and said, cut him, he's out. People went crazy. They're like, what are you talking about? You can't cut Christian Pulisic. What do you mean I can't cut? Of course I can. Cut his fucking ass out. The only one who can get away with something like that is Messi. Everybody else, go fuck yourself. You're gone forever. Don't speak to us again.
In fact, when they're injured and they can't go to the national team, they're devastated, man. Think about it. You're Giovanni Lo Celso, for example, right? You get injured. McAllister comes in. You're out.
You might be over forever.
Yeah. You're Tuku Correa, for example. He plays in Botafogo, right? You had a chance in the national team. You didn't take it. Julian Alvarez. Thiago Almada. Why are these names coming up? You just have them? What? Why? They can't not miss a game. They can't. Let's not talk about Argentina. Hakimi hasn't had vacations in like 3 years.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. Why isn't he taking vacation? Because he wants to be top level. There's no, oh, I feel sick. I'm not feeling good. I won't show up to the national team. No, Hakimi went to the Olympics.
I hear the complaints already, though. Oh, but Gary, understand that Argentina has so much depth, right? Like they're A team, B team, C team, D team. They're all good players. They're all replaceable. Motherfucker. But here in the States, they're all replaceable too. Here we've anointed. We think that the A team here is like a whole universe ahead of the next guys. Do you know what I'm saying? Do you know what I'm saying?
Okay, so like, they're like a different breed, right?
Yeah, they're trying to say like these guys are irreplaceable. They're just so much better than the other guys that are quote unquote behind them. And it's just not true, Facu. It's just not true. It just so happened that the guys who are the A guys here, they were elevated and they were allowed or went to Europe and play in Europe. And the other fuckers who are here up and coming, they're not elevated as much. So the public naturally thinks that, oh, the other guys are just like, I don't know, gods. And these guys are, you know, mortals sort of thing.
Yeah. When you're saying that, I'm just imagining like these guys have like three legs or what? The A team, what? They have 6 feet? No. They're exactly the same human beings as other players. If you think about it on the player's side, right? Like the B teams or the third teams, these guys have a bubble around them, right? They're untouchable. I'm never going to play. Why should I try?
Yeah, it harms that too. Correct. That's true. That's true.
Like, why would I try if I'm never going to be captain of the U.S.?
Yeah.
Because this guy's just wearing an Ironman suit.
Yeah, why should I try? I'm a winger, and they already anointed Christian Pulisic and Timothy Weah and all these other guys. They are the wingers for the national team, and that's it. No discussion to be had. Like, why should I? I never even thought about that angle, dude. But in Argentina, obviously, it's different. It's like, nah, if you perform, fuck that fool. I'll take his spot.
What do you mean? Of course. If you miss one day of training, you're done.
Is this kid Mastantuono legit, dude?
I mean, dude, he has to be. Gary, he's 17 and he's playing in these environments that I'm talking about. And he's performing. He's not bad. He wants the ball. He does have quality, but he doesn't have pace. The difference between Lamine Yamal and this guy is that Lamine is fluffy, bro. He is flying.
And I see players now, and I'm shocked at how skinny they are, really, because I used to play back then, and now I weigh myself, and I'm like 82 kilos, and then I Google how much does Julian Alvarez weigh? 10 kilos less than me. That's 20 pounds less. These guys are flying. Imagine Lamine. So I think he is good. He does have great quality. He has a wicked left foot, but he needs to go to his right more. He uses his enganche way too often. It's so predictable. And maybe not predictable for Gimnasia or, you know, teams here in Argentina that don't have the budget that Brazilian teams have, the budget that European teams have. He does have quality, but he needs to get quicker.
You think that's possible?
Well, I've seen Julian Alvarez grow into a beast. He was a beast here. Don't get me wrong. He scored bangers with his left and right. But everybody here, when Julian Alvarez was here, oh, he scored 5 goals against Patronato. He's not going to score in Europe. Oh, he got bought off by Man City Group. He's not going to play Man City.
Yeah. And look, dude, he got thrown into that environment and he had to compete with Haaland, who is the god of the moment. So it's very tough, dude.
Mm-hmm. And he had to put in weight for sure. He had to put on weight. He had at least 2 or 3 months where, you know, his body changed. So maybe with Mastantuono, they could, I don't think they're going to draw 45 million on someone that they don't think could be good. They did it with Vini. He was quick, but he was awful.
Yes.
I remember his presentation. It was disgusting.
Oh, bro, he couldn't juggle at all.
I've never seen a Brazilian like that in my life. I mean, this guy has a statue. He's done nothing. You know what I mean? I saw it on Instagram the other day. But they saw something in him that could be different. I think he has that difference. He's so young and he's played in these environments. And I think they bought him because they could potentially coach him and build him into something different.
And maybe a different position too. Maybe he's not fit for being an extremo, being on the wing.
Being a winger, yeah.
Yeah, just play him in the interior, make him be a Toni Kroos type, or make him be a Luka Modric type, potentially.
I see him more like James.
Oh, okay.
He has a wicked left. He's good, like three quarters, like on the higher end of the field instead of playing.
Defending
and you know, making the team play. I think he's built to, like, destroy defenses.
But he'll probably start on the B team. Remember when Vinny first went over there and Madrid started him on Castilla, the B team, obviously, and everybody was going crazy. Like, what the fuck? Like, how could you purchase this player? And he's on the B team and stuff. But look, they did it right, man. They built him up. They had him acclimate there. Don't throw him into the fire right away. So the same might happen with Mariano, no? No, not Mariano. What's his first name again?
Franco Mastantuono. Franco.
He might start on the B team, or no?
He might. I think that would be best than sending him on loan, because he could probably be further away if he's on loan. But if they see him there every day, then maybe he'll crack the first team. Maybe. Or maybe if Rodrigo leaves, I don't know if they're not looking into him in the starting 11.
That'd
from
be crazy.
From what I hear here, they're definitely considering him. It's nuts. They wanted him quick, man.
That's wild. That's wild. If he goes over there and is immediately thrown into the first team, that's pretty crazy. That's pretty crazy. Hey, have things changed with Milei there? Like, what are people saying? What do you think?
He's cleaning house, man. He's cleaning house, Gary. It's incredible. Like, he shrunk the government. He said, this doesn't work, out. This doesn't work, out. He's just cutting heads left and right, and he's exposing everyone.
So are people content with how things have been progressing?
I think they're content with the fact that his idea is to help us. I think they're content with what he's doing now. I don't think they're super happy of what that looks like in our everyday life, because things are super expensive, and they still are, and you can't really travel or do much
because you're still in construction. But finally, you're in construction. I think people are starting to see that. And there are some soldiers that are still left with the other government, but it's just all coming to light. There was, for example, roads or highways or plants that were supposed to have been built by the other government, and they never were. That money was all stolen. And that's in every state here, you know, and in every provincia, in every corner of Argentina. So he has to expose everyone. And it's really a tough task. And it takes somebody like that to do it.
Somebody with balls who has nothing to lose, like, fuck it, I'm gonna go for it anyway. Yeah. Like if they oust me after 4 years, so be it. Who gives a shit? Like, it has to be done.
It has to be done. And somebody like him has to do it. I mean, you have to be crazy to go against these guys. For sure. But I mean, at least he's putting us on the map, you know, like people know who Argentina is now with the World Cup as well. Obviously, a lot of, you know, eyes have turned to this side of the world. We do get a lot of tourists. People love coming here. I think from what I experience, I hear more knowledge in the world about Argentina than ever before.
I agree. Same with people here in the U.S. And I think it is those two factors. Obviously, the World Cup helps, but I think Milei really came in with the chainsaw and made the world listen. I'm happy for it, man. I still remember when I was a little kid going to Argentina and sitting at the grown-ups table and listening to my parents talk to, you know, their brothers and sisters and parents themselves and everybody around the table talking about inflation and talking about how strong the dollar is and, you know, what economics. Yeah. And I'm like, what does all this stuff mean? You know what I mean? Like, what do you mean? How strong is the dollar? Like, but think about it. I was like a 10-year-old or a 7-year-old or a 13-year-old. And I still think back to those days. And it's crazy to think that it took me decades after that to even start appreciating even a little bit what those things meant. Right. Because here in the States, we've been insulated from the notion of inflation, right? Like, yeah, we have inflation and stuff. And yeah, people are starting to wake up as to what actually causes inflation, which is corruption in the government and printing money here. But never before, people here were blind to it. And so many are still blind to it because inflation is anywhere between 2 and 10% or whatever, because they play with the numbers, fucko. But in Argentina, everybody fucking knew what inflation was, why it was that way, all the corruption. They fucking knew from the very beginning, brother. And I bring this up too. Go ahead. And you want to say some things.
No. I imagine you were a toddler when that was happening. This guy has to fix those problems. That's what's crazy about it. He has to go way back. Mm-hmm. It's so hard
to get out because the roots are so deep because it's been decades. You have to tear it up from the roots. Otherwise, the fucking tree will grow back into the tree after Milei's out of office.
Exactly.
No, it's crazy. Fuck. And I kind of wanted to bring this up for two reasons. Number one is I think the state of a nation from an economic perspective, from a political perspective, from a cultural perspective, all those things also drive the football in that particular country. It's all connected. And so people need to get a full feel for why a culture is the way it is. And so the way I describe Argentinian culture in many respects, and I have to be a little bit humble because I don't live there and I've never lived there. I've only gone there because, you know, all of my family's in Argentina and we would go all the time. And my parents are Argentinian and they would inculcate these things. Is that because of how that country operated for so long, the people of the country were always looking for an edge. And they're always looking for an edge. Like, how can I kind of bend the rules or sidestep the rules or find different angles to solve different sorts of problems? Because it was the only way to survive. And then that carries over into the football.
Exactly. Survival of the fittest.
And the other reason I wanted to bring it up, sorry, Facu, to interrupt. The other reason was because you saw my post, right, on Instagram about basically study Bitcoin. And you liked the post. I'm curious, you know, from that side of the world, because it's an escape from inflation, right? Instead of buying bricks to preserve whatever money you just made, people buy Bitcoin or something else. I don't know. Maybe you can enlighten me a bit.
No, they do. They do. There are a lot of traders here. And there are a lot of scams as well. So a lot of people feel, you know, iffy about getting into that world. In fact, I lived a scam. So I lost money in, you know, investing in crypto. I didn't invest in Bitcoin, but I invested in the trade market.
Right.
So,
and that's a lot. This is a huge rabbit hole. And I know it's a soccer podcast, but people in the audience kind of know that since it's all related, I go off on these tangents at times. All that other crypto stuff that's not Bitcoin, for the most part, is scam. It's a scam. It's in what's called an affinity scam. So Bitcoin is the real thing, the first and the real thing. And then a lot of people saw the success back in 2009, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. And they're like, oh, why don't I just fucking create something like this and call it a digital coin too? And then I'll sell it. People will buy it, hopefully, you know, wanting to get rich, like the Bitcoin people got rich. And it was all a scam. So everything that is not Bitcoin, Faku, for the most part, almost entirely, unequivocally, is a scam. So I always get sad when I see folks and they'll ask me questions about it and stuff. Oh, Gary, what do you think about this? I'm like, bro, stay the fuck away. The only thing that is real is Bitcoin. That's it.
So anything else like XRP or Solana or any of that?
No mames. No mames. Don't touch any of that shit.
Okay.
None of it.
I understand.
None of it. And unfortunately, unless you sit down and actually study for 100 hours or 1,000 hours and have a little bit of technical understanding, like math, it's hard to come to that conclusion because you really have to understand what decentralization means. You have to understand the difference between somebody issuing a coin versus not issuing a coin. You have to understand cryptography, obviously. You have to understand what nodes are, you have to understand what miners are, you have to understand principles of economics, specifically Austrian economics instead of Keynesian economics. So there's so many ingredients that you have to dive down the rabbit hole for and also kind of discern what information is bullshit and what information is not bullshit, which is difficult, Faku. It's very difficult. But I was just curious because you ended up liking that post. I'm like, oh, I wonder, you know, how deep into this Faku actually is or isn't. That's all. It was a curiosity.
No, I mean, I understood a little bit about crypto because since I worked for US-based companies, they would pay me in US dollars, but not physical dollars. I couldn't bring them into the country because if I would send them to my bank account, they would tax me like 70%. So I'd get like less than half of what I made per month, if I wanted to, you know, just send them to my bank. So what I would have to do is I would have to buy USDT. I use the platform. I bought USDT. And with those USDT, then I could change them into pesos in that same platform, right?
Yes.
And then what I would do with whatever was left, then I would just buy bits and pieces of, you know, altcoin coins and Bitcoin. That's what I knew about.
Got it.
But not really into it.
Right. Got it. No, but it's interesting you say that because the global South in particular, they kind of need those so-called stable coins because it's hard for you, if you're earning money in pesos, to go get dollars, right? Because dollars will preserve their value more than the peso will. But it's hard to do that. And the exchange rates there, I mean, you can tell me, like the exchange rate, they kind of tax you pretty hard too, right? Whenever you go to try to get dollars for your pesos, is that true? And there's a limit maybe?
No, not really, because what was happening before was there was a huge difference in between the official rate and the blue rate, right?
Yeah.
So now it's the same.
Oh, wow. So there, because of Milei probably.
Yeah, the dollar is high, meaning it's like 1,200. But that's the official and blue rate.
Got it. It wasn't like that, though, not too long ago.
It wasn't. No. It wasn't like that. And not only was it not like that, But the stretch was just ridiculous. It was like, for example, 800, the official rate. So when you would go to the bank, it was like 800. It'll take it to for 800. And the blue rate was like 1,600.
Yeah. So, oh my God. Okay. Yeah, that's what I was saying, is that that's why the stable coins, the digital dollar, is so helpful for a lot of countries, is because you can just exchange it online in those platforms and then just sit on it. You can exchange in and out, in and out, in and out. And then you can just preserve your wealth in dollars. But I know I'm getting a little bit off track here. I just was super curious as to the situation there.
No. But it makes sense. I mean, I like the fact that you asked that, because there's a lot of people here that when they get into that space, they just make so much difference. When they really just understand it, they blow up. But now it's a little bit more stable. People could save their pesos because they're basically the same as saving dollars. There's not such a big difference. What Milei is thinking about is like, I don't want just a group of people to win money, to get saved. I want to save everyone. I want everybody to have the same chance to be saved. In the cases before, the exchange houses were just getting super, super rich, the owners of the exchange houses. But the average Joe was getting just poorer.
You think he'll win again? I know it's still a long ways away. His term, when does his term end? Like in 2027 or something like that? Do you think he might win again?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, that's good.
I hope so. I really hope so. Like, I don't belong to any political party. I just want what's best for the country. And it's like, dude, I've been here for 14 years. This is the first time I've ever seen any change. If you don't know who Manuel Adorni is,
no,
you should follow him on Instagram. He's so good.
What's his name again?
Manuel Adorni. He just tells you everything that's going on.
Got it. And unfiltered, it seems like, just straight up.
It's so unfiltered, bro. I mean, it's so crazy because he has an open mic, and obviously everyone in the room can ask him questions, and they're from different political parties, and the way he just shoves them off is incredible.
I love that, dude. I love that the world has started or is going in this direction. And look, politicians are still politicians in my opinion. But at the same time, I do appreciate that it's more unfiltered. And they'll drop an F-bomb, or they'll fucking drop profanity, and they'll speak like the people speak. You know what I mean? They don't put a fresh coat of paint on their language necessarily. It's like, hey, it's like me and you having a chit chat over some beers. That's how they speak now. And bro, you haven't been in the States, and maybe you hear stuff or whatever. People have lost their minds here, the public. Lost their minds. They're like, this guy's not presidential. If you're presidential, you're supposed to kind of be a suit and be clean cut.
Act as if.
But that's the thing. They're all fucking actors. All the guys who came beforehand, whether it was Clinton, Obama, the old guy, the geezer who just went out of office, fucking Bush Senior, Reagan, they're all fucking actors. They're all putting on the fucking act. And then in their own private conversations, they're dropping F-bombs. They're talking like we talk.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, bro. It's not a political show. But it's, look, because you're in Argentina, man. And I want to go.
Why don't you come, Gary?
Yeah, I want to go visit, man.
Like, why hasn't been so long?
It's just, you know, I'm busy, dude. You've probably seen from a distance all the stuff that I've been up to and I do. And like, aside from the personal life, but yeah, it's almost 24/7 it's been for me the past 10 years from a work perspective. So it's hard to get away. I mean, you saw me fucking going to Europe constantly. I was there all the time, city to city to city, and cutting deals here, there, everywhere. And when you're not traveling, you're not doing that stuff, you're still in your head. So it's hard to carve out, you know, because to go to Argentina, do it right, I got to go there for like at least 10 days. It's hard to carve out 10 days, but I think I'm currently in a space where I could be able to do it.
Why don't you can't work remotely when you come here, for example?
Yeah, I can.
Take some days off.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, I could do that. Yeah, I could do that.
We have stable internet. It's not like you're going to the
jungle. I was wondering. That's why I messaged you. I'm like, hey, man, is it stable over there? What's the internet
like? My internet flies. No, it's good. I mean, you'll find a lot of similarities with Europe, I think. Maybe not the US, but, you know, it's a lost European city in South America, Buenos Aires.
Yes.
When Brian came, he stayed in Puerto Madero, and he's like, oh, this is so nice, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, dude, you're in a bubble. Don't believe this shit. Like, yeah, this is cool, but this is more Miami shit. You know, this is not where I live. It's not the reality that I'm living. So I try to take him to the hood. Like, come see my mom. Come to this place. See where I'm living. It's not bad, but it's definitely not Puerto Madero. It's not Palermo. Right. You'd be surprised, Gary, if you go to Palermo, the amount of people that speak English, it's incredible. Like, I swear to God, because it's so cheap. You know
how much is a house?
If you come here, you get an apartment in Palermo for like $700 a month.
Rent, obviously. Yeah.
Rent. Yeah. A house here would be, it's probably like $200K, like a good house.
Like what, a three bedroom?
Yeah, three bedroom, maybe even four bedroom.
Okay. $200K, $200,000.
$200,000, yeah. The thing is that we don't have like credits. You know, it's really hard to get a credit to buy a house. Otherwise, I would have bought my own house for sure.
What's the law, if you know, right, for foreigners buying something? Like if I wanted to buy something, can you do it? Can I do it or no? Like you're going to have to do all kinds of...
No, I think you can. I think you can. But I could. I'll investigate and let you know.
Yeah, over here it's ridiculous, man. It's like $1 million
to get something.
No. I'm just saying what money will get you here in the States nowadays. Like $1 million here in Southern California, like in Orange County, $1 million will get you a tiny little two bedroom house.
Wow, that's not even
a single family home. Like it's a town home. You're sharing walls and stuff. Like
that's nuts. It's
out of this world, man. Out of this world. I mean, if you go to the middle of the country, okay, $1 million will get you something amazing, fantastic. But Southern California, forget it, dude. You've got professional people here. Professional people, professionals, right? With careers, serious people who are making 200, 300, 400K, they're renting. Or if they buy something,
it doesn't make sense to buy,
not,
right?
It's not extravagant.
Can you get a credit and buy a house?
You mean loan? Of course.
Yeah, you get a loan and buy a house, right? You don't have to.
Of course.
I'm just imagining if I had $1 million, I just wouldn't drop it down on a house. I'd get a loan, and then put half of it in, and the other half I'd do something else with.
No, for sure. There's all kinds of financial games that can be played.
But you'd be surprised, Gary. Like, there's so many people, foreigner people in Palermo, living in Palermo, Recoleta, Belgrano, because it's so cheap. Like, you come here, you rent a three-bedroom apartment, two-bedroom apartment in pleno Palermo, $700, $500, you know? And steak is way cheaper than anywhere else. You got great wine, good city to live in. It's vibing every single day, Palermo, in Recoleta, in Belgrano, in Puerto Madero. Puerto Madero, I think, is more expensive, but they work remote. You know, they're winning $3,000-$4,000 a month. That's more than enough.
Yeah. Okay. So they come here and go there.
But I'm saying, like, people, what do you do with $4K a month in the US? Not much. But here, it's a gang of money. Because rent is cheaper, food is cheaper. If you're thinking in dollars,
right, correct.
But if you're making pesos, it's really hard, man. That's $700 would be like what? $700. Let's see. I think it's 840,000 pesos. So almost 1,000,000 pesos. That's what people make a month. So that's why it's so
food.
Hard.
You have no money for food or anything else. Everything would go to the
rent. Yeah. Or you have to live with somebody else.
Got you.
You come here with $4,000, $3,000.
Is it safe?
Yeah.
It's pretty safe.
It's like anywhere in South America. Well, not maybe not everywhere. You have to be cautious.
When you, like when you first
you have to
went
be cautious,
there,
but
yeah, when you first went there, I saw that people stole your scooter, your iPhone, or something. You guys got jacked. You and your friends got jacked or something at knife point or gun point, or am I thinking about somebody else?
I got jacked. I got my car stolen. They pulled up with a gun to my head, saying get off. But I wasn't in the right place. You know, I wasn't even thinking straight. I was in my car. It was on, and I was just staring down at my phone. When I looked up, they just cut me off. You have to be careful. That's it. If you're careful, if you're alert, then you'll be fine. But you can't just be walking around with like AirPods like this all over the place, or with your phone out in your hand. Even during the day, because there's so many people in Palermo. They could just come by with a motorcycle. They're so quick. It does happen. But you have to be alert.
It's nothing crazy. Like you aren't going to get killed or kidnapped or that sort of stuff. For our American audience, you know, we need to tell... Argentina has bad marketing, honestly. Argentina, as you kind of hinted at earlier, is Europe in South America, or was Europe, rather, in South America back in the day. And, you know, during the time of World War II and post-World War II, when people were leaving Europe and coming to the Americas, they literally had to make a decision. Do we go to the United States or do we go to Argentina? Those are both of the golden nations, so to speak. Those were both of the nations. The golden cities on the hill was Argentina or the U.S. And then obviously, you know, Argentina collapsed, and I'm not going to go into the whole history of it because obviously I'm not an expert, but it collapsed for, you know, certain political movements and took power. And now that's what Milei is trying to undo, as I understand it. But Argentina needs better marketing, man. Everybody over here just thinks, oh yeah, they're good at soccer and good at steaks, meat.
No, you should come, Gary. You should come.
Everything else is shit.
How long has it been?
Bro, I think I was in my early 20s last time, so it's been 20 years.
You need to come. It's so much different now. Like even when I got here, there's a galaxy of difference. The neighborhoods are different. The society is different. There's a lot of people that speak English, a lot. When I got here, nobody spoke.
You met my partners, right? My partners in the agency, when Gustavo and Ivan or whatever, they're pretty chill guys. Did you guys have a beer together or meet or something?
Yeah, they were cool. They were staying at Hilton and Mati was working there. I went up, we met, we had a beer. We went out, I think, too. No, but they were cool. They were super cool. I think they dropped me off of my house after. Yeah.
We'll save that for another day. I at some point, I want to bring them on the show as well. Because I want people to understand the network, right? We've got tentacles everywhere across the world, man. And some guys, I forgot who was on the old Rage team from you guys when I sold Alex to Ajax. People are like, hey, Gary, hook me up too. Like, I'll play in China if you want me to. I'm like, hey, man, you don't want to go to China, bro.
Oh. I'm down to go to China, Gary.
Hey, there's still guys from your generation who are still playing pro. Remember Dion Akoff from the Arsenal team?
Yeah, I remember.
He's playing in USL. He's playing in the second division here still.
That's cool.
That is cool. Oh, do you remember Luis Gil?
I do.
Luis Gil, the kid that I said was a super phenom baller, and like obviously, in my opinion, I think MLS ruined him. Still playing. Now he's playing in USL also. Brian plays against him. He's played against him twice now.
That's cool, man. That's crazy how relationships work and how you stay connected. I love it.
All right, my brother. Any other thoughts or ideas you want to maybe put out there into the universe? Before I sign off here, I know it's almost midnight for you. Or is it midnight? It's past midnight for you.
No, it's 11:40. I'm good, Gary. It was just really nice chatting with you, touching base again. I think we should do this, you know, maybe off camera, obviously, but more often, man.
Hey, at least tell people that I was a fucking baller too. Come on, Faku. You know I knew how to play, bro.
I learned my backspin with you, man. I still hit the ball like a baller, and I remember that you taught me how to backspin it 100%.
Hey, how about shooting on goal though? No?
Shooting on goal, I remember, you taught me some free kicks as well, but I remember still like I do have a great backspin on the ball.
That's
like
good.
I hit 70 meters, bro. Just bangers to the
you
feet.
Need good backspin.
And that's all you. That's all you. I remember that.
You need some good backspin, man. Backspin action. All right. Hey, Faku. Fucking love you, brother. Even though
love
we're 5,000 miles away, never talk. There's still some connection there, man. It's weird.
We still fam, man. We still fam.
All right, man. Hey, I'm going to take you up on that. Maybe during Thanksgiving week, I'll show up.
You always have a home here, man.
Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches. You can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.